Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of House Finance to order. It is about 1:33 p.m. on Monday, June 12th, 2017. President or Representative Ortiz, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Tilton, Representative Grin, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Seaton. And before we start, I wanted to remind everybody to mute their cell phones. And today the plan is not an in-depth analysis of a bill. We are going to look at the concepts as it was presented in the governor's fiscal compromise package and how these concepts can serve as a mechanism to generate revenue. To this end, I asked my staff to put together some information on the employment and self-employment tax as presented in SB 12 and how this mechanism can be used to generate revenue. At this time, I'd like to ask my aide, Arnold Liebold, and Tanika Hansen, both come to the table. Mr. Liebold. And I'd like to also recognize that Representative Sadler is with us, and if people have questions on details of the tax, we also have the tax division here. And, oh, Representative Clayman is in the audience, and Representative Josephson. So with that, would you put yourself on the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Arnold Liebold, staff to Representative Seaton. I asked Tanika if she can go back and get my glasses. I apologize for that. As the chair has explained the intent here today, I put together a brief presentation. We're not looking at an in-depth analysis of SB 12. What we're looking at is the concepts that are embedded within SB 12 and how that can be used as a mechanism for generating a broader base tax. As you know, SB 12 was put forward by the governor last week as one of the items that he asked the legislature to address when he was putting forth some suggestions for a compromise budget for the legislature. And so that is the reason that we're looking at SB 112 as a starting point for today. It was put forth as looking at SB 112 with the intent of generating about $100 million of additional annual revenue.
And just for clarification, it's SB 12.
SB 12, yes.
Representative Garrett.
Yeah, just for one other clarification, Mr. Liebold, the bill, even though the governor asked that the legislature took a look at it, this is Senator Bishop's bill, or is that correct?
This is correct. Senator Bishop's bill, as it is.
Okay, thanks.
So I'm on slide three right now. We have, I think, only nine slides in the packet. I'm going to start off with the first few slides simply to go over the framework of SB 12, of how it is designed and what it does accomplish. The first three bullets, I think, summarize succinctly what what the bill does. It estimates, on the second bullet, estimated to generate about $60 million that would be put forth to Educational Facilities Maintenance and Construction Fund as defined in statute. It would do this by imposing a tax on wages and earnings from self-employment tax, and the intent is to generate about $60 million annually. So with the $60 million, about $5 million would be from non-residents. The way that this happens is it creates tax brackets of corresponding flat tax rates. This is different than a percentage. It basically says if you earn between X dollars and Y dollars a year, you would pay this much. If you earn between Y and Z, you would pay this much. It does not apply to capital gains, not to investment income, not to retirement or unearned income. And just to be clear, as was just brought up a little bit ago, so we are just looking at the framework of the bill as it is currently written.
Before we go on, I wanted to recognize that Representative Stutes has joined us.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So could you tell me how much currently sits in the Education Facilities Maintenance and Construction Fund?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I can't tell you the amount that is in there, but I do know that the amount that is in there is fully encumbered, and so the amount that is actually available for appropriation is zero.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
And could you tell me approximately every year how much do we take out of that fund for these types of projects?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I do not have that information.
Okay. If we could get that, that would be very helpful, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
So, just two questions on the forms of income that will be counted. One is, so capital gains aren't taxed, so if you're somebody who lives off stock market investments, that part is not counted towards your income, correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
And then the other, I've just been curious as I've looked at this, let's say you're a part owner of a corporation like an S corporation, and so you get a share of that corporation's profits. That's your money. Does that count as income under this bill, or are those persons not subject to this tax?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think that would be dependent on how the income would be defined.
For the record, Tanika Hansen, staff to Representative Seaton. SB 12, as written, uses the IRS definition of net earnings from self-employment, and there are some mentions of partnership income, and some partnerships are S corporations. But there are also a lot of specific exemptions for that partnership income and what distributions would be counted as under the net earnings. So without a closer analysis, it's hard to answer that question fully.
And I wanted to interject to remind everybody, we do not have SB 12 before us. We're looking at the concepts of SB 12 and what has been reported out on that. There's also a kind of a draft, a fiscal note, fiscal analysis, which is where the $60 million figure came from. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Having been a owner of a corporation, if we did checks at the end of the year of how much money we made, the IRS considered that to be a bonus, which was also then included in your W-2, because that was a bonus check of the performance of the company. It wasn't a payment of a dividend from being a corporate stockholder. So there's a lot of questions in that gray area.
Seeing no further questions, go ahead.
Turning to slide 4, there's a few things that I'd like to point out on this, a graphical representation of how the tax structure would impact Alaskans across the income spectrum. So the first thing, if you look on the table, the blue table, this basically shows the amount of tax that would be owed. And so anyone earning less than $20,000 a year would pay $50, a flat rate. Similarly, anyone earning between $20,000 and $50,000 would pay a flat rate of $100. Anyone making over $500,000 a year would pay a flat rate of $500. In terms of interpreting the graph, on the far left is the percentage showing to the extent that this would impact an individual's income. It goes between 0% and 0.6%. You can see that basically the high impact is at the 0.5% level. The graph has a very interesting configuration. You can see it spiked, and it's marked at certain spike intervals at 20,000, 50,000, 100,000, and at 500,000. So there's a few things to notice in there. Since the tax is structured, bracketed the way that it is, so if a person, I'm going to use the 100,000 line on the graph. So if a person is making slightly less, let's say 99,000, and then they cross into the threshold of making over 100,000, they're going to be going from a payment of $200 to a payment of $300. So that's going to impact them slightly more until they increase their wages to a point where it brings it back down. And so that's why there is a jump in these. The impact at the $20,000 to $50,000 level will be greater than at the impact between the $50,000 and $100,000 level, which will be greater than the impact between the $100,000 and $500,000 level. And so that is why the size of those spikes decreases as you go out to the right across the income spectrum. And so in general, it's fair to say that this is a fairly regressive tax. It is going to have a higher impact for those on the lower end than it will at the higher end.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson, then RT.
Thank you very much. So it's kind of hard not to talk about the bill, and I'm not talking about the bill. I'm just really just the concepts from within the bill. So a while ago, we got kind of caught in between wages and income. So I know those are two distinct different things, but if we're really talking about income, would everyone in the state be paying the $50? Would the dividend count as income as far as this type of structure would go, and therefore everybody in the state would be paying the minimum of the $50?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's a good clarification. No, that would not be the case. In this bill, the income or the taxable income is defined as wages or earnings from self-employment only.
So follow up, Mr.
So
Chair.
The PFD would not qualify for that.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. So kind of back to Representative Guerra's question then, and he was talking about S corporations or trusts or any of those type of things. None of those would be earned income. Is that not correct? If you were like a passive, you're not actively involved in the business. You're just, getting basically a dividend check off of that corporation, whether we're talking about native corporations or we're talking about high-end business, that's all they do because you're just kind of an investor.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, if that is something that you're talking about, dividends from a publicly traded corporations that you report on your capital gains on your federal taxes, then that would not be included here. Again, the definition used in the bill, which was the starting point for this analysis, is net earnings from self-employment that the IRS uses. That does mention partnership distributions, but has several exemptions for that. This is basically trying to, my first understanding is that the IRS was trying to narrow it down to what you're receiving for a distribution for something that really is your self-employment income. But it's kind of a more detailed answer than I think we can get to right now. So I think some of it would be included, but not the dividends from somebody that's just investing in a company and then getting some dividends back.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
And do you have any idea, because we're talking about middle class seems to get hit harder with a particular structure. Do you know where most of our military would fall underneath? To me, it would be probably middle class to probably low middle class. Do we have any numbers from labor that would help us understand that better?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I do not have that data with me. I don't know where they would fill. It'd be speculating to say anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ortiz, and then Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to slide 3, if we could, the bullet that says estimated to generate $60 million annually with $5 million from non-residents. Can you recall whether that's a greater proportion of revenue coming from non-residents in comparison to what would have been generated from the House bill that we passed earlier in the session? Is that a greater percentage or a lesser percentage of revenue coming from non-residents?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I think the percentage is fairly similar.
And I just might clarify on that, if you're talking about non-residents, most non-resident income comes from wages, and this bill, as presented, was taxing wages, and so it didn't get into other income, just from wages. So essentially, the proportionality would be pretty similar, I believe. But again, we don't have the direct analysis here before.
Okay.
Representative Guerra?
Yes, Chair. I just want to get it on the record. I think this is a good idea to take a look at for people to discuss. But as it sits, Mr. Leibold, I'm reading this obviously correctly. The wealthiest pay the lowest percentage of their income tax, and the poorest pay the highest percentage of their income. Or the wealthiest pay the the lowest percentage of their income under this bill the way it's written, and the lowest income pay the highest percentage of their income under the way this bill is written, which seems a little backwards to me, or quite backwards, but I'm reading that correctly, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, correct.
Okay. Obviously, Mr. Chair, if something like this were to go ahead, I would be one that would want to see that changed.
Were there further questions? Seeing none. Ed?
Just to finish up on slide four. I think there is one comment I would like to make, and out of respect for the sponsor of the bill, that the bill was designed for a specific purpose to generate, I would say, not a huge amount of revenue, generally about $60 million. And so this is just one option. You know, it's not that it's a good option, it's a bad option, that it needs improvement or anything else. It's one option that is out there. And even with when we're discussing broad-based taxes, there's I think, as we all know, a multiple of ways of a broad-based tax could be implemented. And even within looking within the confines of the structure of this one bill, there are structural changes that could be made. We could be looking at different brackets. We could be changing the amount of tax per those brackets. Right now, there's only five brackets here. So that's something that could be changed. In terms of trying to make it perhaps more equitable, one option might be looking at that percentage on the left on the vertical bar and saying we would like to keep the impact level somewhere between 0.3 and 0.4% across the income spectrum. And so you would extrapolate from that to what it would mean for a tax level for those brackets. And so just to raise awareness to it, there's so many different ways that this can be sliced and diced. And this was devised a specific way for a specific purpose to fund a specific fund. So with that, I'll move on to item 5 or page 5.
Okay, fine. And we did receive a question from a member in the audience, and that was asking if SB 12 was passed, could there be a effort to repeal it and every by the citizens, and of course every action that the legislature takes in substantive legislation is available for referendum under the Constitution. So just like every other action that the legislature takes. So might say just let everybody know that was from Representative Sadler. And I wanted to recognize that Representative Parrish has joined us in the audience, as well as Representative Carr. So thank you. Go ahead and proceed. And by the way, I do want to say, and we'll see it later, but you know, just because these brackets showed up in a certain way, wanted to emphasize that this is just the analysis of the bill that was introduced. It doesn't mean that the bill would have to be structured that same way. Every bill that goes through committees gets amended and gets changed to when everybody looks at them. And I also wanted to just make it clear that my office did not do this analysis. We requested that the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy compare this as they have done on other things, and so that's where these tables and comparisons come from.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
So you said they were comparing. I didn't understand that part. So what was this group comparing it to?
Representative Wilson, we've had a number of comparisons that we've had for tax structures from the Institute. In fact, I think everybody received a copy of the ITEP report that laid out all the different mechanisms, and they identified one that we'll look at as far as a employment and self-employment tax, flat tax mechanism, instead of this bracketed mechanism, but based on exactly the same criteria as the governor set out, which was employment and self-employment tax. And so that's where that's what we're looking at today, is what was the issues on the call and several different ways in which that could be structured and put forward. So that's we'll get to those in a minute, but that that's a comparison. This is one way, SB 12, in which a employment and self-employment tax could be structured. And after we get through with this, we'll look at another way to structure an employment and self-employment tax.
Thank you. I was just trying to figure out, because it was just one bill at this point. Thank you.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, so I just want to I think the chairman is right, but I think it's not obvious. It's obvious, I think, to people around the table. This legislature is stuck on high center on a way to resolve this session quickly. And I hope people will take a look at this bill, or if there are other bills out there, the oil tax bill, for example, which would be my preference, but to figure out a way to raise some revenue to close the deficit. That's fair. But I think the chair has said it. There are other ways to look at this bill, or my preference would obviously be the oil tax bill. But thanks.
Okay, looking at slide 5 now. So this is just another way of looking at the impact of SB 12 the way that it currently is. The income brackets, I added the income range down on the bottom. So I guess I'll start off by simply explaining the graph so everybody understands how it is read. So this is the impact to the various income brackets across the population, broken down to the lowest 20%, the second 20%, and so forth. As you get closer to the end, you'll notice that the last three bars are the next 15%, the next 4%, and the top 1%. And the reason it's doing that is for comparative purposes, so that we're able to compare apples to apples. On the left side of the spectrum, no, you're not allowed to, well, you can't make less than $0, but there is no limit on the right side. You know, people can earn as much as they can possibly earn. And so rather than saying everything above $115,000, which would have a very large variance in it, it's broken down to $115,000 to $228,000, and then the next 4% is $228,000 to $556,000, and then the last top 1% is grouped in there. So that's the reason we're doing it, is for comparative purposes. What it is basically showing is the impact to a person's overall impact or overall wages and earnings. And so those in the lowest 20% are lowest 40% are impacted at a higher level than those on the higher end of the spectrum.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
So it would be really helpful, because we're talking about out-of-state and not out-of-state workers, if you included in the future, which I'm assuming we're going to keep talking about income tax, that you would have on here the dividend and the impact it has, because if I'm in-state, I'm going to be paying a dividend tax too. If you're taking $1,000 of mine, I feel like I'm being taxed. That's just me in North Pole. But so that's going to have an impact. Plus, if this gets, or whatever other tax gets added, it's going to show a much greater rate versus somebody who's out of state, which is what we keep talking about, getting our share from our out of state workers. And I just want to see how lopsided, you know, that becomes if you include the $1,000 that, or $1,500, depending upon who you, you know, which the dividend packages pass, and what that has to do with each one of those ranges as well. Because if we're going to do apples to apples, you've got to include what's on the table. And we've got a bill right now that is $1,000 or $1,250, depending upon how it happens in conference committee. And then if we're looking at this bill or another bill that's an income type of tax, that's going to have an impact too. I need to know the total impact on each one of these ranges. Who are we hitting and how hard are we hitting them, so that we're keeping it all together. Thank you.
And Representative Wilson, the ITEP report does have the chart showing the differential impact on these same groupings, the lowest 20, second 20, middle income, middle 20%, the top fourth, and then the others. And it has that for the permanent fund reduction. So we have that chart, and it's been distributed, and you would have to lay that on top of this, and you would see the same feature where the lower incomes are proportionally as a share of their income affected much more. In fact, it's greater than this. And so, but if you know you were asking about your military constituents, and if you know which grouping they're in, let's say they're the middle 20 between $40,000 and $73,000, you can see where they are at 0.24% under the SB 12.
And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that, but most of the public aren't going to be able to go find all these charts, and it's really for them that I'm asking for that to be so they could see it. I have no problem going back to my office and doing that and pulling all the right ones out, but since these presentations are as much not just for us but for the public to understand how all these things work together and the impact it's going to have on them. And so that's why I was, if it's one chart, it's much easier for the public to be able to see that than us digging around and making only a copy for ourselves.
Thank you, and just so the public knows that the ITEP report from April is on our website, which has all of those graphs in it. Doesn't have SB 12 in it, but it has the other, all of the other graphs. Go ahead and proceed.
Just trying to help them out, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
And Representative Wilson, through the chair, just a one more clarification on how the charts work. In all of their analysis, the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy analyzed how much money would be coming from non-residents, but when you're looking at the impact across the different income groups, it's only looking at the impact across Alaskans, because they were using Alaskan financial data. If we tried to guess how many non-residents from different states were in, and it would greatly distort the analysis if we were trying to do non-residents and residents in the same chart here. But they can say how much is coming in from non-residents.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
And I greatly appreciate that portion of it, but I guess what my point, though, is that when we talk about them individually, we kind of leave off the cut in the dividend, because that won't impact out-of-state workers. And so, you know, when we go back in here, well, we're going to make sure the out-of-state people pay, too. We want to just make sure that we understand what those differences are, you know, in this. And you can take this for out-of-state, too. Like you said, how much they're making, they're going to pay that percentage, you know, of it. But they will not be, you know, having to put in other monies because they're not residents. So that was what the difference I was trying to make. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Ready to proceed?
Okay, we're on slide 6. So this is where we move a little bit more away from SB 12 and look at some of the options that could be, some of the concepts within the bill that could be implemented to generate greater amounts of revenue. And basically we outlined three options. One that I discussed a little bit earlier is increase the number of brackets and the tax rate per bracket. The other is change it from a flat tax rate to a percentage rate. And another option is you can include the earnings from capital gains and other investment income in addition to wages and earnings from self-employment. And so if we just look at some of the options, there's a small table in the middle in blue. To generate about, if we look at, we want to generate $500 million annually, what would that take if we did a percentage rate on earnings of self-employment and wages? If we did a 2.43% rate on wages and self-employment earnings, it would generate about $500 million a year. You can play with that number a little bit up and a little bit down. If we go down to 1.82%, we'd be able to generate about $375 million a year. If we need to generate up to $750 million a year, it would be about 3.65%. What's important to note that this is not a progressive rate. That, for example, on the $500 million, the 2.43% would apply to everybody at the same amount. And so it would have several impacts. It would make it a little bit more of a level playing field. It would impact everybody at the same percentage amount. It would be able to generate a fairly significant amount of revenue. And again, it only applies to earnings, wages, salaries, and applies to residents and non-residents that with sources of income within the state.
Representative Ortiz.
So the effect would then be a true flat tax, then, is that correct? Would be what you call a flat tax?
As long as it's understood that it's only on wages and earnings from self-employment. Oh, I'm sorry, through the chair on that. Okay, moving on to slide 7. And slide 7 and slide 8 are fairly comparable. These are comparison slides. And so what these are showing is if we need to generate, and again, $500 million a year annually, This is the comparison between doing it as a payroll tax at 2.43% or doing it as a personal income tax, as was done in a previous bill. And then how do they compare to each other? The takeaway from this is if you look at the brackets that are circled, so that's 95% of the income earners in the state, and they would be impacted at a greater extent through a payroll tax than they would be as an income tax. And that is simply just how the, again, just looking straight at the 2.43%, and it's applied to all wages in the state. What's also interesting to note is if you look in the middle bars, the middle 20, the fourth 20%, and the next 15%, with doing a 2.43% on payroll tax, what we would refer to as a payroll tax, it impacts those groups actually more than it does the very low end or the very high end. So there's a bump in the middle. So it does impact the middle income or the middle class more than the others. It's not significant, but there is more of an impact there. So if we go on to the next slide, slide 8, this is very similar to the one, the previous slide. The only difference on this one now is we're looking at a payroll tax, but within it, we're also adding investment tax. So this one would include a payroll tax, as well as capital gains, investment income, and other unearned income. And so once that is applied, and it's applying it to the same personal income tax, and you, if you could draw or visualize a horizontal line across the tops of those bars, the dark dark aqua, I don't know, the blue-green bars, the darker ones, you'll see it levels out quite a bit by doing so. And so what it does, you have an impact on the lower 20% at 1.2%, and that rises to 1.7% for the middle 20%, and then it slowly comes down a little bit, 1.4% for the top income group. So by adding that, it does make a significant change on to the extent of how individuals would be impacted in the different types of groups.
Mr. Chairman?
And before we go on, I'd just like to say that I don't see it on here, but the tax rate dropped from 2.43 to 2.1% in between slide as the flat tax between slide 14 and 15. Again, that broadening across the income, that's not what's in the governor's suggested bill, but that was the very next one here, and we've been talking about trying to get things more equitable among groups, and so you can see that that's about the flattest we've seen in any kind of structure, having a flat tax across all types of incomes. And that is also, like I say, reduced from 2.43% needed to get that $500 million to 2.1%. So, Representative Wilson.
So why are we in this, thank you, Mr. Chairman, in this source using $2,200 per person as a dividend? So are we looking to give people their money back?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, this analysis, again, came from the ITEP report. Each revenue-generating option was looked at separately. So within the report, there's a figure looking at, well, what about generating $500 million through change to the dividend? But in order to look at that dividend change compared to other revenue-generating things and to hold everything's equal, they, in all of the other revenue options, we're taking what is the projected dividend for the next few years and not a reduced dividend of some unknown amount.
And this was done earlier in the year under the statutory rates. Right now, the statutory rate is about $2,200. That doesn't mean the legislature is going to approve that, but that's what the statutory rate is. So when you added in just what other income there would be, they added in the statutory rate. We didn't ask for this at all.
Well, I kind of already figured that out, but I do appreciate it because nobody's offering $2,200 except those who don't want the dividend cut. But the reason I'm asking it is because how does that figure, especially when you're looking at lower income and you're looking at whether you're talking about a payroll investment tax or personal tax. So now if you're talking about $2,200 per person or $4,400 for a couple, or if I've got five kids, you know, this should impact, by using $2,200 versus $1,000 or $1,200, would impact these bars, would they not?
Representative Wilson through the chair. It would, on this slide, you would see an impact directly on the tax amount that's being paid. On the previous slide, because you're not taxing the dividend, the impact would be you would have to combine the reduction of the you could lay the reduction of the dividend bar right on top of the bars from the tax, and that combined amount would tell you how much their income would be affected if the dividend was changed and they were taxed. The interaction between the two would be slightly different here because a small percentage of the tax on, from capital gains and investment income could potentially come from the dividend depending on how the bill is written. But you would still be able to take that bar from the reduction of the dividend and add it to the bar from the tax and get a pretty close idea of how much of their total income would be affected by those two changes.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
But it will affect the personal income tax on both pages, because in the personal income tax, at least if we're looking at the one that was in HB 115, did tax the dividend as well.
It did not.
Part of it. Was it all out? Okay, that's right. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, Representative Wilson through the chair. That's why I stated in the previous one where we were just talking about the taxes on wages and self-employment income, it would not affect the bars at all. In this one, there would be some effects depending on how the bill was written.
I just want to make sure, Mr. Chairman, that people, you know, when you, because that really just surprised me too, is the $2,200 down there. So thank you so much.
Representative Gary, did you have a question?
Just only if you remember, Ms. Hansen. So obviously not thrilled with the disproportionate impact on lower income people under the way this bill is written. You were asked about the dividend. The lowest dividend that's being proposed in the building is by the Senate, a $1,000 dividend. I think our minority leader had a $1,000 dividend bill last year. Do you have any, do you recall sitting here, we can look at the reports, but is the regressiveness, the disproportionate impact on the lowest income people, how does that compare with the Senate's $1,000 dividend to Senator Bishop's bill, or is that something we should just look at? Do you remember?
Representative Garrett through the chair, I think there's kind of too many variables for it to be valuable for me to talk about that, because when Senator Bishop's bill raises much less money or would contribute much less money to the state budget than the reductions proposed either under the House or the Senate, because it is set to generate $60 million right now. And then these graphs that we're looking at here are set to generate $500 million. So you'd have to equalize those before you start having that discussion, and I think it'd be a little too abstract to try and do that orally.
Sure. Thanks.
And, of course, like on this number 15, this is based on a $500 million. That was the ITEP's report to keep all analysis of all taxes so you could comparable, so it generated $500 million. If you wanted to cut that in half, instead of 2.1% on slide 15 as a flat tax, it would be 1.05%, and then it would be $250 million of generation. So that's why we're putting these, making those comparisons, is not for the specific numbers, but to look at the comparisons, and then those can be scaled up or down within a but. It's really been hard, and Representative Wilson, I've appreciated your emphasis on what's the impact going to be of when we make a change. And so what we want to do is bring forward this, because this is, as far as I can tell, the best that we've ever had looking at the different segments of the Alaska economy and what is the differential impact on people in those segments, because it's been really hard to find what is middle income. I mean, we knew the average income, you know, somewhere around $46,000-$49,000 per year, but you didn't know the size or the range of the middle 20%, or the lowest 20%, or the upper 20%. And so this is trying to get at the question that you have been asking about what is going to be the impact on different segments of the population. And so that's why this is there. And I hope people, if they're interested in these things, will go to the website and pull up the entire report. It's only about 20 pages long, I think, and it has all of the details that people want, not huge tables of figures, but actually graphically showing how these relate and how they impact the different economic segments of Alaska. And so as we go forward with our discussions, that's what we're trying to have so that we don't have unintended consequences. So I appreciate your concern there. And Representative Guttenberg, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Recognizing that you didn't do the analysis, or I'm not sure, it looks like in Senate Bill 12 there's five brackets. Right, and most of the analysis from that are in here, there are seven brackets, 20% brackets, in the analysis. I don't remember how many there were in, I think it's 115, but do you know offhand how many brackets we have in the IRS codes to get up to $500,000 in income? I mean, I'm sure it's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot, but just trying to understand how the step-ups or downs happen.
And before we go there, I just want to clarify that these brackets or these
percentages
bars that we're seeing are not based on differential tax rates,
right,
as in taxes. These are looking at segments of the Alaska economy. So we shouldn't confuse those two at all, because these are flat taxes, not brackets at all. And Senator Bishop's bill was introduced as brackets, actually,
yes.
Different change of, I just wanted to add that so that there wasn't confusion.
Right. Mr. Chair, and I also recognize, you know, it's this percentage, I mean, this much money for, you know, to this point, and then maybe a percentage up to the next bracket, you know, it's done lots of different ways, but I'm just wondering how many different the brackets the IRS have or we've had in code, or you know, how it rounds up. How I know at times when we look at tax rates, and it's a step instead of a curve. It's not the impacts happen other ways as well.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, this is just from memory, but I think the IRS has eight brackets or nine. It's not too many more than were being discussed in 115 previously, but we've seen states that have 15. They have them, you know, every $200,000. So there's a wide range. And also, again, that's just talking about the IRS income tax. This is a payroll tax, which is slightly different. There's, on the federal level, you're talking about sometimes you see steps instead of curves. With Senator Bishop's bill, you see more of that step instead of a curve because you have flat rates. With things like the unemployment insurance, that cuts off at a certain, you know, it only goes up to like $43,000. So, yeah, at the federal level, you have layers of ones that are, you know, a curve and ones that are steps, and on the state level you have layers of different taxes that do things differently. So there's a very wide range.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And just remind everybody, when they're looking at these and they show a percentage above them, that's a percentage versus your income, not your tax rate. Your tax rate is identical on every step, but depending on how much income you have, it will have a higher or lower effect on your income, because not all of the income is taxed. And also realize that the impact on the lower income levels would be higher if we had a $1,000 instead of a $2,000 dividend, because this is analyzing the total income of people at and families with the $2,000 statutory, that's what's in the law, dividend, and not the proposed changes that we have right now. Just didn't talk about the vetoed amount last year. Are there further questions? So, anyway, go ahead. Did you have?
I have one more slide just to wrap it up, but I think on the very last slide, we've pretty much, I think, through the discussion that we've had here, have came to the conclusion that there's many, many ways that we can have a broad-based tax, be it a payroll tax, a sales tax, an income tax, PFD reduction, however we want to frame it, and some of these you might want to even couple with each other. Some of these are going to be more regressive than others, some will be less regressive than others. So there are many options available, and that was really the point that we just wanted to get through today, just to present some of the options that are available and then how we can tweak some of those levers one way or another. And with that, thank you.
Great. And again, the object of our hearing today was there was an item on the floor, the subject of which was employment and self-employment tax. And it used as an example SB 12. We do not have SB 12 before us. We've just looked at cursory the examination of the revenue impacts of that and the impacts of that on the different segments of Alaskan community. And so we've also taken up the other scaled version. Representative Guerra, you have a question?
Yeah, that was clumsy. thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my fault. Mr. Chair, I know that only if it's only if you think that would be a good use of time. I just have a really quick question. If we're allowed to, if we have time to ask Mr. Alper quickly, he could write a bill if the folks on the committee had some of the ideas that are in this presentation. If this becomes a way to compromise our way out, but you know, is it a week to write that up? Is it a day?
You only have 4 days left.
Back to the napkin.
Well, I
put him.
Or with Alper, do you want to come up, or I'll just answer that? You know, to figure out and generate this proposal, there has been a bill drafted,
right,
just to look at and everything else. So it's not like there's a long, but Mr. Alper may be able to tell us what that would look like.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ken Alper. I'm the director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. First part of an answer to Representative Guerra's question, I don't write bills, but if the desire would be to modify, say, Senate Bill 12 into a structure that would reflect the kind of thoughts that were in Mr. Liebold's slides that said a higher level of revenue, more equitable across the ranges, that would not be a big lift for either the Department of Law or Legislative Legal. Our concern related to this bill that we've expressed is just a little bit on the technical side to make sure that, you know, as opposed to the income tax bill, which had 35 pages of complex language, we just want to make sure that there's adequate delegation to the Department of Revenue to write the necessary regulations to be able to implement this bill. The rest of it, as far as the tax tables and the policy choices embedded within there, are not a very complicated change to the basic bill structure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Alper, assuming, unless I get my way to have you write this into an oil tax reform bill, which I don't think I can get you to do, but that would be my preference. The one question I asked earlier on, I don't want people who have a lot of income to not have that income counted if you ever use this bill. So if you're a corporate owner, like an S corporation owner, you know, you're a you make a significant amount of money as your shares of the S corporation profits. Right now, S corporations pay no tax to the state. Would your S corporation income count under the definitions in this bill, or would you remain tax free as an S corporation owner?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the way the Senate Bill 12 is currently written, the way we would interpret wages and earnings from self-employment, self-employment would be fairly narrow. We're talking about self-employed individuals, sole proprietorships, as well as contract-type employees. I would not contemplate that, say, partnership and S-corporation-type distributions, capital gains, those are the sort of things that would not be included in the bill the way that it's written. Again, all of that could be changed depending on how the bill could be amended.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Ortiz, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, but actually it would be for Mr. Hoffbeck.
And we'll have to see whether he's willing to come forward. And
no.
Yeah. Willing?
Not willing.
Welcome. Would you put yourself on the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue.
Representative Ortiz.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Hoffbeck. Mr. Hoffbeck, I don't like to talk about taxes. I don't want to start paying taxes. I just don't want to do that. That's just not my preference. And I think that's probably the preference of most everybody in the state of Alaska. But my question is, based on the most current information that you have right now, based on perhaps a higher projected oil production forecast than what we maybe originally were looking at, and based on good performance in the stock market for our permanent fund, if we were to adjourn this session without any other added revenue, would we have the prospect of a fiscal plan in place, adjourning without any other added revenue in this session? Would we have, in your view, the prospects of a fiscal plan, a sustainable fiscal plan?
So, the Chair, Representative Ortiz, when we ran the numbers out, we ran it using the motor fuel tax and $100 million in the head tax, we looked at really two options. One, if everything happened perfectly, that where we got the higher production, we got the higher price, we got the returns in the stock market, that theoretically we could have a balanced budget in within 4 or 5 years, that we've got enough growth in our revenues. If things happen in a more consistent fashion to what we've been seeing, we were somewhere, but we're looking at $500 or $600 million short in the first year, and we've kind of a prolonged at least $300 million shortfall.
And does that $300 million shortfall also take into account other obligations like PERS and TERS and obligations like existing oil tax credits that are on the books right now?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, no, there would be no provision for those additional payments.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And I have a question just on self-employment. So if we're going by the IRS on self-employment, I mean, you figure that out completely different. You get to take off your deductions for the expenses of your business before you actually get to what your income is as self-employment. So would that be the number at the end of that form? I believe it's Form C that you do as an IRS, that you would then figure out where on the table, for instance, on SB 12 that you would be paying taxes on?
And through the Chair, I would defer to Ms. Hansen to answer that.
Representative Wilson, through the Chair, I'm still getting familiar with the exact definition of net earnings from self-employment. It's several pages long. But there are several deductions in there. I think that it would likely be that line, but I can't say that for sure yet. I'm still reading it.
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
So I file on self-employment, so I know what it looks like, and it's like 20 deductions mm-hmm. that you have from whether it's advertising, automobile, rent, most of those before I get to what is my wage as a self-employment for the business that I run. And then if I make a profit, then it's a percentage I'm taxed by the federal government to basically offset putting money into Social Security. So what I'm just trying to figure out, because we're always trying to talk about being fair, is that would be a very different kind of calculation that if I'm an employee somewhere, and the amount of money I would be taxed at. So none of that would fall underneath these percentages, but it would be important to know that, you know, those people who are self-employed may pay a lot lower, but yet it's kind of a different way to be able to kind of hide the other kind of monies that you have. Well, you're talking about that or rentals or anything like that, which you have deductions. And I'm assuming we're following the IRS code when we're talking about wages and earnings, and that's just what I'm trying to verify.
Representative Wilson.
And Representative Wilson, I draw your attention to page three, slide three. Now, this, of course, is SB 12, but the language is net earnings from self-employment and wages. So it's net earnings. So if we're reading that, that means after subtraction of business costs. So for self-employment would be the net earnings. Otherwise, you'd be talking about the total business value of self-employment, which is not, I think, that what any analysis here is.
Well, thank you for making my point. That's exactly what my point was, because I could have another kind of job, and I have a whole bunch of things that I have to get for it, whether I'm a firefighter and I have to buy all the equipment, and all that won't be deducted off my wages. I'll have to pay it, but if I'm self-employed, I will be able to count all those things. So it's another thing just to bring up that when we're trying to be fair, fair is something you go to in the summertime. You can't always be fair when it comes to taxes. Just wanted to make it, bring attention to it. Thank you.
And again, I just want to state that, you know, we are looking at this from a high level, so nobody has developed that bill structure or the details of that, but we're looking at that. Those are definitions that would have to be created, and I appreciate what you brought up. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for the presentation, and we will recess House Finance. No particular reason, just you never know what needs to come back to Finance, so we'll recess to the call of the chair. However, we don't anticipate any meetings today. We're recessed at 2:30.